Non-increasing read means sorting. Therefore, n log n is always, in a certain sense, there. Maybe not n to some power, as it is in some interior point methods, but n log n might come into game, okay? Because for every iteration, we need to find the maximum of a certain thing, and then we have to sort out the entries, and that's how n log n comes into game. Are you with me? Good. So expect the sparsity of the solution. The other aspect that we might want to take into account is the fact that yes, the, how can I say? Yeah, the point is that such type of method actually, or such type of problems are again related to the fact that we have a sparse solution. The problem can be also defined in an infinite dimensional space. Okay? So we want to consider infinite dimensional problems. And we will see, hopefully, in the third lecture today, that these methods can be tailored to infinite dimensions. Why? Because if you consider a regularized problem with L1 in infinite dimension, the solution will be sparse. Punkt. Okay? It's true, the problem is defined in infinite dimensions, but the solution, with respect to a certain basis, will turn to be made of a finite number of non-zero coefficients. Which of them, you don't know. Maybe there is some coefficient very far, but finite dimensional. So the question is, can we inflate the space of search where we are working on from the minimal dimensional space, growing up to the point that we get exactly the coordinates we want, and we stop there? Okay? This is something that interior point methods and all the stuff, you cannot play with that. You cannot really address infinite dimensional problems unless you cut them properly and you make fine exception, whatever you want to do, and somehow we will open a new concept in this direction. Another thing is that many of the algorithms that we can present can be naturally and easily parallelized, okay? They can be easily parallelized. And that's another important aspect. So I'm working on some projects concerning the urban reconstruction from satellite measurements, from remote sensing, okay? And they show me fantastic results provided certain sparse recovery method that they used. And they show me a breathing city. What is a breathing city? Every city has its own buildings, and they are basically, by satellite data, they are trying to reconstruct the urban surface in 3D. And the funny thing is that, of course, you have also the sun, and the sun usually is warming up some part of the buildings, and the other part of the building keeps colder. And as soon as you warm up the building dilates. So you can see, these simulations are fantastic, the measurements are so precise that you can see the breathing of the city according to the fact that there. The point is that for 2 square kilometers of urban area, they took, I don't know how many weeks to do the computation, okay? So it's very important to being able to parallelize and bring everything to a efficient computational facility. So parallelization is another point that we might want to explore and extend and somehow address properly. Okay? So this is more or less some of the advantages that you have by thinking more precisely what you can do for L1 minimization. So now I would like to stop one sec, and I want to off. And I would like to start with an algorithm, which is a useful algorithm. First of all, it is very efficient as soon as the solution is expected to be very sparse, okay? Because the complexity will be depending on the sparsity of the solution that you are computing, okay? The other aspect is that this is a direct method. What does it mean, a direct method? Like in linear algebra, you distinguish between iterative and direct method. A direct method means that after a finite number of iterations, you are done. You have the solution in your hand with 10 to the minus 16 error. Okay? So this is a direct method. You will see how it works. And it is very useful in practice. Why? Because when you want to test other algorithms, and you want to understand whether they compute the solution properly, how fast they compute the solution, and so on and so on, you want to have the solution in your hands, precisely. Okay? So this is usually used in order to compute an exact solution that you can use with iterative algorithms that you don't they don't compute the exact solution, they compute an approximation. Okay? So it is used as a benchmark to decide how fast certain algorithms converge to the solution. Are you with me? So this is as a useful, this particular useful characteristic, besides being particularly efficient for very sparse solution. So this method is called homotopy method. Okay, and unfortunately, there are a few mistakes in the, a few typos in the lecture notes. So I will try to give you the right formulas here. So the type of methods, the type of problems that we are facing here are even more general problems. Depending on a parameter lambda positive, we consider the functional f lambda x 1 over 2 ax minus y L2 squared plus lambda the L1 norm of x. Okay, so this is a regularized least squares, and their regularization is given by this term. Okay. So lambda, say hat, is very very large. Okay. So then, when lambda is equal to some lambda hat very, very large, we have that x lambda is actually equal, lambda hat is equal to zero. So as soon as we make lambda sufficiently large, the only penalization that makes sense here is the only value of the penalization that makes sense here is zero. Okay? On the other hand, if lambda goes to zero, the limit of for lambda going to zero of x lambda equal the argmin of f lambda x. Sorry, this is the argmin. Argmin of f lambda z for z in Rn. So we don't write it here. This is equal to x star, where x star is actually the argmin of x in L1 for ax equal to y being the constraint. Okay? So, what does it mean? It means that as soon as this become very, very small, this has become dominating. Minimizing it at some point means that that has to be zero, but at the same time, this term has to be minimized as well. Okay? So, first of all, we would like to prove this statement, unless everybody knows how to do that. Okay? Is there somebody who doesn't know this, how to do this? You don't know how to do this? Adrian? Okay. Well, we can skip it. We can go further. So, do you know how? No, I'm serious. Craig. Okay, that's what I wanted to know. Okay, so then we try to assume. Okay, then we write it in the form of a proposition. And assume there exists x, such that ax is equal to y, so that there exists a solution of this linear system. So, if the minimizer x star of the L1 norm subject to AX equal to Y is unique, then the limit of lambda going to zero of X lambda is precisely X star, where x lambda is the minimizer of this particular functional. Okay? More in general, if x star is not unique, then the accumulation points of x of the net x lambda are still minimizers of f. Are still minimizers of L1. So this is the our L1 problem, you remember? So we can simply recall it like that. Okay. People working on regularization theory of classical linear inverse problems knows a lot about this, but I may like to take the chance to present a variational point of view, or Italian point of view, which is the same. And because, I mean, there are some tools created and invented by the Italian School of Calculus Variations, for example, the concept of gamma convergence. Who doesn't know what gamma convergence is? Wow, everybody. Okay, almost everybody. Okay, so today we will prove this little thing by using the concept of gamma convergence, let's say, which is a nice concept. So, the proof how many of you know what is the direct method? How many of you doesn't know the direct method of calculus variations? Fine. Okay, so somebody is calling Weierstrass theorem. Somebody is calling Vitali's theorem. Okay, depends on where you are. So, what is the direct method of calculus variations? It's a way to prove that a certain functional or a certain function has minimizers. Okay? The first thing is direct method of calculus variations is made of three steps. So, the first step is showing that you can have minimizing sequences. Okay? Construct minimizing sequences. And what does it mean in our case? So, as a matter of fact, the infimum of F lambda, okay, is necessarily less or equal than F lambda at zero, which is equal to the norm of Y in L2 squared, which is a finite object. Which means that this is infimum, which is necessarily non-negative, is a finite real number. Okay? So, as such, there exists always some Zn such that the infimum of F lambda x in Rn is less or equal than F lambda Zn plus 1 over n. Less or equal than the infimum of x in Rn F lambda x plus 1 over n. And why this is the case? Because this is the, a definition of infimum. So the infimum of in a set is that stuff that, provided any perturbation of it in the right direction, let's say, allows you always to find elements of the sets which are accumulating in the middle. Okay? Is it clear, Craig? So, what does it mean? It means that the limit of Fn of Zn, if you take this limit, is equal to the infimum of x in Rn of Fx. Okay? So, that's why this is called a minimizing sequence. This is called minimizing sequence. The second step is compactness. Which is related to the concept of coerciveness. What does it mean that a function is coercive? A function f is coercive if the level sets of this type are compact. Okay, in some topology. We are in finite dimension at the moment. Okay, so the Euclidean norm is what we have. So this is equivalent to say compact or bounded. Okay? So the sets of X such that the functional is bounded by a certain constant, those type of sets are always bounded themselves. Okay? Are you with me? Craig? Yeah, if you want. Mm-hmm. So, in particular, F lambda of X is always bigger than lambda X in L1. Are you with me? And so, what you find is that if this is bigger than a constant, then the set of X such that F lambda is bounded by a constant is bounded by a constant. Actually, the constant is C divided by lambda in the L2 norm. Okay? Are you with me? In the L1 norm. Okay? Which means, in particular, that without loss of generality, we can assume that the Zn in L1 are bounded by some constant. Why? Because this is a minimizing sequence, okay? So it has to be bounded. It's a converging sequence in particular, okay? It has to be bounded, and therefore the elements Zn of generating that minimizing sequence, they are bounded themselves. Okay? This has another consequence, that there exists some subsequence which converge to some Z star. Okay? So, we know that the F of Zn converge. We didn't know anything about Zn a priori. Now we know that Zn is bounded, and therefore we can extract some subsequence converging to Z. The last step of the Dirac method of calculus variation is called lower semicontinuity. Okay? Lower semicontinuity. Okay? What does it mean that the function is lower semicontinuous? F is lower semicontinuous if for any sequence converging F of X is less or equal than the limit of F limit over N of F of Xn. So there is no continuity, but there is a limit type of condition from below. Okay? This is called lower semicontinuity. Okay, and why it is a good condition? Because many norms, in particular the any Hilbert space norm, if you have a weak convergence of your sequence, okay, then the norms are usually lower semicontinuous. Okay, and since many of these functions are constructed by combining continuous operators with norms, that's why you are so interested in this type of lower semicontinuity properties. Are you with me? Okay. Especially in higher dimension, okay? In higher dimension, in infinite dimension. So when we are dealing with Banach spaces or with Hilbert spaces, these play a particular role. In our case, everything is continuous, even. Okay? We are finite dimensional, everything is very, very continuous, with absolutely no troubles. But this last point, connected with the other two, have the following particular consequence, that the limit of F Zn K of this particular subsequence has to be bigger of F Z star, where Z star is the limit of the subsequence. Right? So we are applying the lower semicontinuity of our F lambda. Actually, we have a continuity, so we have even continuity. We could write there lim, okay, not limins, okay? Okay, but what is the limin for the lim of the sequence? Well, this is the infimum over x in our n of f lambda of x, because this is a subsequence of a minimizing sequence, so it has this convergence. What did we find? We found that this infimum is actually attained at s at z star. Are you with me? Which means that this z star is a minimizer. Okay? Let's call it x lambda. Okay? So now we know that these functionals actually have minimizers. So we were starting taking into account these minimizers, and we were telling that we can take the limits of these minimizers or all this stuff. But that was a sort of act of faith that these minimizers exist. Now we know that they exist, and we found a recipe that one can use to prove it. Okay? Any question? This recipe is actually used a lot. So this is a special semester on variational methods and inverse problems and so on, applications in imaging. Anytime you see a functional, you have to automatically think, how can I prove that this function have minimizers? Okay? And most of the cases, not all the cases, this is the way you do that. Okay? Are you with me? Very good. Now, I don't feel guilty to have spent some time to do that, because you will see that these concepts are related to some other concepts, which is the concept of variational convergence or gamma convergence, okay? Which is nothing else another version of this theorem, a little bit more sophisticated, okay? And now let's try to understand how this gamma convergence actually work. Okay, now we know that these minimizers exist. Let's take any sequence of them with n, with the lambda n going to zero. What can we say about these guys? Okay, let's call this xn. Well, xn in L1 is less or equal than 1 over lambda n f lambda n of xn. Okay? But those guys are minimizers of this functional. Therefore, we can always consider them less or equal than x star for some x star solution of the linear system. So this is a vector such that this is true. And we know that there exists an x solving the linear system, so we can allow us to do that. But that means that this is 1 over lambda n of what? Of lambda n multiplied by x star in L1. This is something that does not depend anymore on lambda n, and it is actually a bounded constant. So what do we find? We find that this sequence is itself bounded. Okay, the sequence of minimizers is usually bounded. Are you with me? So we can consider the set K of vector Zs in Rn such that Z in L1 is less or equal than X star in L1. And we can consider the minimization of these functionals over this set, because actually we discovered that any minimizer anyway is in there. Are you with me? So, and this is again a compact set and blah blah blah. So we keep it in mind. Now, let's introduce a new functional. And let's call it f of x equal to 1 over 2 a of x minus y squared. Okay? Who is the minimum of this functional in this set? Craig. No, the minimum. No, that is the minimizer. X star is the minimizer and the minimum value. Bravo. Anytime I ask you, the answer is always zero, if you noticed, you know. So f of x star is zero and this is the minimum value. Okay? Are you with me? Fine. So the other interesting fact is precisely the fact that we have a certain property of f lambda. F lambda of x, do you agree with me that is always bigger than f of x? Okay? Not only that, point-wise, f of lambda x converge decreasing to f of x. Right? Do you see it? Craig. No, it's not zero. Okay? Fine. So we have this property. This is one of the special cases where pointwise convergence of a functional imply its variational convergence. Now we try to understand what does it mean variational convergence. So here we have a functional that converges to another functional with respect to a certain parameter. But this convergence is pointwise and decreasing monotonically. Okay? When this is not the case, and I'm not going to make you counterexamples, in general, one cannot say that the minimizers of this functional, okay, converge to minimizers of this functional. Okay? So pointwise convergence is not sufficient for convergence in the sense of minima. Okay? Only when you have a certain beautiful convergence property, then it's okay. What I mean is the following. So if you have a functional, which has a minimum here, and you have a sequence of functionals that from above converge in this sense, pointwise, then you can really prove that the corresponding minima converge. Minimizers converge, and minima converge. Otherwise, not. Okay? In general, in order to have convergence of minimizers of a functional, okay, you might want to invoke a more general concept of convergence that is called gamma convergence. So let's take a functional g lambda and a target functional g. Okay, we say that the sequence g lambda gamma converge to g if two conditions are true. The first is the so-called Lie-Minf condition. That is, for every sequence xn converging to x, f of x is less or equal than the Lie-Minf in n of f, g of g lambda n g xn, where lambda n is a sequence extracted by these lambda parameters. The second is the Lie-Minf condition. Sort of, but you choose one. for all x, there exists a specific sequence convergent to x, such that gx is bigger or equal than the Lim sup n g lambda n xn. Okay? These two conditions. This is the concept of gamma convergence. Now, why this concept is useful? Because it's a technique to prove, also in cases where you don't have such a nice situation, that minimizers converge. So let's assume that xn is a compact sequence of minimizers of g, lambda, n respectively. Okay? So we take the minimizers of gn and we assume that they are compact. By the way, this construction show us that our minimizers are compact, because they are uniformly bounded in Rn. Are you with me? Craig. Fine. Then what can we say? Okay. Take any x tilde by 2, there exists an x m tilde converging to x tilde, such that g of x tilde is bigger than the Lim sup or over n of g lambda n x m tilde. Okay? But the xn's are minimizers of these functionals, so you can always write this as the limits over n of g lambda n xn. Is there anybody who doesn't agree? Good. But then we can use 1 and say that this has to be bigger than g of some x star, especially because here we can take a subsequence. Okay? Why we can take a subsequence? Because this sequence is compact. So what did we find here? We find a guy which is actually an accumulation point. Of xn, such that is its value of with respect to g, the value of g on it is always less than the value of g of any other point x tilde. Hence, that guy is a minimizer of g. So as you see, these two conditions together and compactness imply convergence of minimizers. Okay? Do you see it? That's how you prove convergence of minimizers. As you see, this concept is very similar to the one that we have seen before as the direct method of calculus of variations. There are only some of the fact that there is some dependence here that it was not present before. But if you want, you can use this to prove that. Just take g lambda n equal to g, and you have your direct method of calculus of variations. Are you with me? So this is simply a sort of generalization of the argument before. Okay? Now, can we prove that this condition, these two conditions, imply gamma convergence. Okay? That's what we want to prove, that the monotone pointwise convergence, the monotone pointwise convergence imply gamma convergence. Okay? Okay, let's take any sequence x n converging to x, limit f of f lambda n x n. This is clearly bigger than the mean on n of f x n. Do you agree with me? By monotone. Okay? But one of the assumptions, what we have here now is that this guy is continuous. No relationship. So you see, there we took the n upstairs because they are minimizers. This is just one sequence converged to some x. Okay, but this is equal to f of x for the construction we made of f. So it's a continuous functional. Okay, so actually, if you look at the first condition of the gamma convergence, we have it. Okay? Now, this is the first condition. Second condition, let's take x and we construct xn equal to x for all n. Okay? So what can you say about that? Well, xn converges to x trivially. Okay? So for every x, we constructed a sequence converging to x. What can we say about this sequence? Well, we can say that the lim sup of the sequence f lambda n of x n so constructed is equal to the lim sup of n of f lambda n x, because every element of the sequence is it's fixed. But since these functions converge pointwise, actually we can forget the sup and we can simply write f of x. Okay? Are you with me? So we actually shown very trivially also 2. Do you see it? But our sequence of minimizers is compact. Okay? And therefore, by gamma convergence, we have that accumulations point are minimizers of f on k. Okay? Do you see it? Are you with me? Now, we know that x star is the one that minimizes the L1 norm among all the guys that are solving the linear system. Do you agree with me? K is written up there. So, let's take an accumulation. Okay, let's take tilde accumulation point for xn. Then we know that x tilde, actually in L1, has to be bigger than x star in L1. Okay? because it's an accumulation point, which means that it's solving the linear system. Among all the guys solving the linear system, X star is the one with the minimal L1 norm. Right? But X tilde must be in K, but X tilde has to be in K too, because K is a compact set, is a closed set. Okay? And by definition of XK, what we have is that X tilde in L1 has to be less or equal than X star in L1. Okay? And this actually implies that X star in L1 is equal to X star in X tilde in L1 is equal to X star in L1. And so what we get is accumulation points are not only solution of the linear system, but they are also L1 minimizers. Okay? Now, if the L1 minimizer is unique, then every accumulation point has to coincide with that. Okay? I will let you think about this. One way to prove it is that for every sequence, for every subsequence of a sequence, there exists a subsequence converging to the same limit, then the original sequence was converging to this limit. That's the way you prove it. Okay? I don't get into the details. Okay, is it clear? So this is a way to see this from a very, very, from scholastic point of view of calculus of variations, okay, with the language of calculus of variation. And so we have been seeing the direct method, we have been seeing somehow this gamma convergence concept, and all these concepts will turn again out in later. So we make a pause of 5 minutes.